Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, a very special program today. Our guest in the second segment of the program will be Senator Rick Santorum, a United States Senator from Pennsylvania, one of the leading Republican figures and one of the most thoughtful figures in the United States Senate. He's written a new book on the family. It's important to all of us, and you'll find out why in the second segment. First, a review of issues in the news and in the culture. You may have seen controversy over a new NBC primetime soap opera planned for the fall. It is entitled Inconceivable. And just shortly ago, the very idea of this program would have indeed been inconceivable. It is a soap opera set in a fertility clinic in Beverly Hills. I'm not making this up. It's almost like an exercise in self-parody, but NBC as a network plans to broadcast this new primetime soap opera. And it's going to be fictionally located within a fertility clinic in Beverly Hills. From NBC's website, it says this. This delightful ensemble drama concerns one of the most complicated questions. By the way, let me just come. You noticed how that we've gone upscale. The soap opera is now an ensemble drama. It concerns one of the most complicated questions, to conceive or not to conceive. The doctors of the Family Options Fertility Clinic are on a noble quest to help desperate couples give birth. Except these doctors are often distracted by their personal quests involving sex, deception, and secrets. Navigating through ultrasounds and super egos, missing frozen embryos, and impending malpractice suits, it's positively clear that life outside this clinic is anything but sterile. Again, I'm not making this up. That's right off of the website for NBC. Go to my weblog at albertmohler.com, look at the article entitled The Truth Behind the Television Show, and you'll see it. But here's the truth you really need to know behind this. I mean, after all, what we're going to see on this show is not only all the tawdriness of the kind of soap opera or now ensemble drama plots, but what you're going to have is a real pressing of the limits in terms of medical ethics and biotechnology and all the rest. Because let's just say that most of the people who are going to be seeking, according to the press accounts, the assistance of this fertility clinic are not well-married heterosexual couples. What you're going to see here is an experiment in social revolution, really, a social great experiment going on here with the fertility clinic as a rather poetic location. Poetic because it gets right to the heart of some of the most central debates, but sad and tragic because of what I think we can now be confident NBC is going to do with this, and for good reason. Liza Mundy of Slate Magazine tells us the rest of the story. It seems that the series was created by two homosexual men who, as Mundy explains, themselves have families with the help of surrogates. Now, just remember, folks, how many times do we have to say this over and over again? Hollywood is about a message, not just about entertainment. We can't fool ourselves for a moment to think that Hollywood is just about making us laugh or making us cry, putting out movies and television series and all the rest just as entertainment. There is a worldview that is being promoted here. And not only is it being promoted, it's being promoted where it can be most effective in reaching the emotions and normalizing the abnormal. That's the real agenda here, to normalize the abnormal and to make everything appear absolutely normative, such that there are no distinctions between right and wrong, heterosexual and homosexual, you know, you just name it. When you look at what could happen in this television series, you can understand why many people are already interested. NBC seems to be just button-popping proud of this. And it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this. By the way, I really appreciate what Liza Mundy, again of Slate Magazine, said about this. She said it's set in a fictional Beverly Hills fertility clinic. That was a good geographical choice, she argues, given that if the show were set anywhere else, the staff might have to occasionally decide not to go ahead with something. I love that line. Anywhere else in America, someone might actually know there was a limit. But not in Beverly Hills. She goes on, there is a real difference between the culture of East Coast fertility medicine, which is more hidebound and clinging, at least nominally, to the notion of medical necessity, and the West Coast, especially Los Angeles, where a more consumer-minded approach to patient care prevails. By the way, notice the words patient care here. In the Washington, D.C. area where I live, many clinics still will not work with gay males, justifying this on the grounds that technically IVF is a medical treatment for infertile people. Many of these same clinics, however, will provide sperm donation services for lesbians, partnered or single, and other unmarried women whose infertility amounts to no male partner. Isn't that interesting? I found that paragraph most revealing. They are redefining a fertility problem as not having a husband or even just a male. We're living in strange times. And the prime time television schedule is one way of finding out just how strange the times are. Folks, when we're talking about Hollywood entertainment and all the rest, there is an article in today's edition of the Wall Street Journal that I think is really important, especially to parents. It's by Jeffrey Zaslow. The article is Plugged In But Tuned Out, Getting Kids to Connect in the Non-Virtual World. The very premise of his article is fascinating because he takes us into the lives of so many American kids, especially teenagers, who are disconnected from any larger conversation with the family. As he goes on, he says that more than half of American kids have TVs in their rooms. That's amazing. More than half of these kids have, of American kids, have TVs in their rooms. They don't have to even watch anything with anyone else. They're in their own little entertainment enclave. And even if you don't have to worry, as we do have to worry, about the kind of programming that could be cabled right into their rooms, we have to admit right up front this means a social and relational disconnection from the rest of the family. Zaslow goes on and says that from his home in Michigan, he was driving a 16-year-old daughter and her friend home from the movies. He mentioned Hurricane Katrina, and his daughter's friend did not even know there had been a hurricane. Believe that or not. Zaslow says she's a lovely girl and an A student, but for days she had chatted online, watched her own TV shows, and saw no news of the tragedy. Her parents hadn't thought to tell her. Goes on and says that Samantha Landau, another young person, mentioned new Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts to fellow students in her 11th grade advanced placement history class, and most had no idea who he was. These kids are not living in a cave. They're not abandoned out in the wilderness. It's not that they're disconnected, drifting on some kind of sea, as if they are they're forsaken and lost and shipwrecked. They're in their rooms. Disconnected from their families, disconnected from their parents, disconnected from the larger culture and its issues. Who are they then connected to? They are connected to their peers. They are connected to Hollywood. They're connected to the entertainment conduit. They're just not connected to everyday life the way you and I know they should be. And what you don't know, parents, will hurt you and it will hurt your children. The very fact that these kids have televisions and computers, internet access, and all the rest in their rooms is a symptom of what we have done in giving children, disconnected lives. They're being unparented, unsupervised, untaught. And this is a wake-up call. This, just from today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. He goes on and says that many children ages 16 to 23 almost never even answer the phone. They know it's not for them because people in their generation don't use the phone, at least not the landline. Meanwhile, another article comes out telling us that there is a vast rise in homeschooling, and we know that. There is an incredible rise and growth in the number of American children who are being schooled at home, and there's much debate about why this is going on, but let's just say that it's precisely a reaction against the kind of situation we've just been talking about, the developments in the culture. It's precisely because not only do we recognize that Hollywood has an agenda, but the larger educational establishment also has its agenda, and all the groups that are given access to the schools have their agenda. And what gets marginalized in all of that is the agenda of the parents, the convictions and worldviews of the parents. That explains this massive rise in the numbers of children who are being homeschooled because, and I'm thankful for this, an awful lot of parents are saying no. I'm not going to surrender my agenda to Hollywood. I'm not going to surrender my responsibility to the entertainment industry. And I'm not going to allow my children to become the lab rats in some great social experiment undertaken by those who have agendas directly at odds with our own. At Princeton Theological Seminary, just a couple of weeks ago, a group of students decided to wear T-shirts that read, "Gay? Fine by me." A group of students on the campus said this was a way of showing support and went on to argue that this was a way that gay persons could recognize who on the campus would be safe to talk to about homosexuality. Well, you know, from a biblical perspective, it's impossible to imagine the Apostle Paul wearing a shirt that said, "Gay? Fine by me." But I would hope that a homosexual would go to the Apostle Paul to talk about homosexuality in order to find out the truth. And I believe the Apostle Paul, were he alive today, would love them enough to tell them the truth. And that's the model for us as Christians. We have to be the people to whom homosexuals will talk. But that doesn't mean that we can be the people who will tell them what they might want to hear. Somewhere between homophobia and the acceptance of the homosexual agenda is the reality that is compassionate truth-telling, and that's what we're really called for. We ought to hope they'll come and talk to us. And then we need to love them enough to tell them the truth. We'll be back with special guest Senator Rick Santorum, a conversation on the family you won't want to miss. Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania is the third-ranking Republican in the United States Senate. He is a name that is very familiar to listeners to this program, and he is the author of an important new book entitled It Takes a Family, Conservatism and the Common Good. It is an honor to welcome to this program Senator Rick Santorum. Senator, we're glad to have you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mueller. It is great to be on your show. I appreciate it.
I published a review of your book several weeks ago. And
I read it.
Well, I'm honored you did so. Let me tell you, I think it is a fantastic book.
Well, thank you, and you were most generous in your comments on it. I appreciate it very much, and you grasped, candidly what I was trying to get at, and I appreciate the great work that you do, and hopefully this will in some way help the cause.
Well, I certainly hope so, and I appreciate you coming on because this can't do anything but help, and it's great to add your voice to this. You know, there are a lot of political figures and statesmen who write books, but I have to tell you, a few as substantial as this one. I really appreciate the way that you not only deal with the positions that I appreciate on this, but you also talk about the foundational issues behind them, and I think that's very important. You talk about the five essential pillars of a civilization: social capital, economic capital, moral capital, cultural capital, and intellectual capital. But what I really appreciate is how you describe the role of the family as essential to a civilization.
Absolutely. It is the foundational unit of a society. And that, you know, may come to some people as saying, well, wait a minute, isn't the individual, isn't that really the basic unit of society? And I make the claim that individuals don't live their lives as radical individuals, sort of, out there on their own. We are part of something beyond ourselves, and whether it's a family, which is the first part that you grow up in, or a faith community, or a neighborhood community, or a civic association, we are part of something that binds us together, that inculcates values, and that builds a healthy person and therefore a healthier society. And that is, I think, what we need to get back to, is to make sure that we have strong families, strong civic and social organizations, and strong churches to inculcate those values and virtues that hold those all together.
But, Senator, there are some who simply wouldn't agree with you on this. You refer in your book to the cultural elites. You refer to them as the village elders, and you talk about their worldview as being characterized by no-fault freedom. Well, what's that about?
Yeah, it's a view, again, the view I have is bottom-up. Their view, the village elders, are really the cultural elites, the governmental elites. They're top-down. And it sort of comes down to this no-fault freedom is how we view this sort of essential element of American democracy, and that's freedom. I mean, that's sort of at the heart of it. And the way the left views freedom is this freedom really just means choice. It means to do whatever you want to do. It means to freedom without any responsibility to anyone else other than your basic wants and desires. And so when you hear the term choice, it's the most popular word in the English dictionary these days, which is this idea of maximum freedom. Well, we know, that if all you do is following what you want and what you desire, people are going to get hurt, number one. People, you're not going to be connected and attached to anything beyond yourself. It's a very selfish view of freedom, and that's not our founders' view of freedom. Our founders believed in a selfless freedom, a freedom with responsibility beyond yourself to something that's greater than yourself. And that is a sort of the nature of the term liberty, which is, you know, this idea that we are in a common purpose, that we have a society that is oriented toward good and responsible behavior.
Senator, one of the freedoms claimed by the cultural elites that concerns me the most is the freedom to redefine words and concepts. And in your book, when you talk about family, you follow the discipline of defining what you're talking about here, and you get right to the issue of marriage. Well, why is it that marriage defines family?
Well, because to me, again, the basic unit of society, we need to look at, you know, what is the healthiest basic unit of society. And from every culture known to man, there's always been some sort of ceremony or celebration that bound one man and one woman together for the purposes of having children, of stabilizing the community, and raising and nurturing that child with a man and a woman, a mother and a father in the home, and that it is in the interest of society to do so. And so the idea that we have to have a society that is in fact built on this incredibly important foundation, and marriage is what we in this society have said is the glue or the bond or that holds that together. And when we deconstruct marriage and say marriage isn't about having and raising children, again, from a societal point of view, isn't about having and raising children. It's simply about the happiness of adults, not man and woman, but just adults generally. Maybe two adults, maybe three adults, maybe the same sex, maybe different sex. If that's all marriage is, then we detach the meaning of marriage from the idea that society's interest in having children and having those children raised with the best possible under the best possible circumstances, which is a healthy marriage of a mother and a father.
I think you are very articulate in your book when you say this: marriage is the word for the way in which we connect a man, a woman, and their children into one loving family. It represents our best attempt to see that every child receives his or her birthright, the right to know and to be known by, to love and to be loved by his or her own mother and father. I find that just to be one of the most helpful, even poetic definitions of family that certainly has entered the contemporary debate. Senator, you're so involved in this, a powerful member of the United States Senate. You deal with these issues at the level of public policy. How do we apply something like this in today's cultural landscape?
Well, I mean, you know, everything from legislative ideas, which I'll share with you in a minute, from candidly having the courage to stand up as leaders in our society and talk about the importance of this issue. And let me assure you, you get beat up when you do that. You get beat up when you try to enter the debate and just talk about the importance and centrality of it, and you offend people. The fact that we don't have the courage, and I'm just not talking about senators, I'm talking about people, you know, and unfortunately in churches and other kind of civic and community leaders who don't stand up and talk about the importance of marriage, the importance of the family and the importance of children having both moms and dads, and talking about the scourge of this unfortunate thing called divorce, and having to do more to try to nurture and support families. To me, that's one of the most central things leaders, and I've said leaders, I don't mean senators, I mean all civic leaders, have a responsibility to nurture and support the family. That's one. And two is legislative ideas. We need to cut taxes for families. We need to encourage families through our welfare policies as opposed to just encouraging mothers to raise children on their own. There's lots of things we can do on the policy side.
Senator Rick Santorum is chairman of the Republican Conference, the third-ranking Republican in the United States Senate. He has served as United States Senator from Pennsylvania since 1994, a man of courage and conviction. Senator, thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Dr. Mueller. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, folks, you'd also want to know that Senator Santorum and his wife Karen have six kids and live out what he's talking about here. The big issue for us, and I want to invite you to join this conversation now, is just how important is it that we define family and define marriage in this culture at this time? The phone number 877-893-8255. 877-893-TALK. I'm Albert Mueller.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. It does take courage to say what Senator Rick Santorum said, not only on this program, but in print. In his book, It Takes a Family. That's why I wrote about it. That's why we've made it a topic of conversation among us today, because not only does he say the right things about the family, but he provides a comprehensive and very credible argument for why a society should honor marriage and family, and put together a set of social policies and social structures that would affirm and not undermine parents, spouses, marriage, family, you name it. One of the interesting things he addresses in this book, and to no small amount of controversy, is the development of what's called same-sex marriage. Now, listen to this. He says, just imagine two or three generations from now, if we legalize same-sex marriage today, what young adults will understand about marriage. Keep in mind that they will have been raised in a society that considers marriage nothing more than a romantic and sexual coupling between men and men, women and women, and men and women. The law will have declared it so, the centers will have been pressured into silence, and the public schools will embrace it and teach same-sex marriage as the law of the land. You know, this is one legislator who understands that laws do more than regulate. He says laws teach. When something is legal, it has the presumption that it is moral and right. If the sexual unions of men with men and women with women have equal dignity with the union of men and women, then marriage cannot be understood as having anything intrinsically to do with children. Society will teach the next generation that marriage is a self-centered endeavor primarily about adult satisfaction, not children's well-being. End quote. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to know if you think that what the senator says here is absolutely right. We have to define legally what marriage is and what the family is in order to have the kind of civilization that will be healthy for the raising of children. He says laws teach, so we have to give attention to the laws. But he also understands that only parents can parent. And I really appreciate what he has to say about marriage, distinguishing it as merely an institution for adult satisfaction, and comparing that with what it would mean to be an institution for the well-being of children. You know, when children are eclipsed from the equation, marriage just becomes an adult pact, an adult contract. And if children are removed from the equation, then why not same-sex marriage? Why not plural marriage? Why not cohabitation? Why not anything? That's why I believe, as a Christian theologian, I have to come back again and again to the fact that marriage is not a human social invention, nor is the family. It is God's design for our health, for our happiness, and for our holiness. The minute you begin to subvert the family, you subvert the very essence of what it means to be human. You begin to misteach the young. You begin to really violate and compromise what it would mean to put the safeguards in place for children to be adequately raised, nurtured, and taught. Let's go to Jason calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Jason, you're up. Jason, sounds like we lost him. Folks, the phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, the problem is sometimes we have so many calls coming in, it is a matter of juggling them. But when you get on, stay on, and we'll get to you. Senator Santorum, you know, it's an honor to have him on the program today. You just think about the precious nature of every minute in a senator's schedule. But the fact that this is a priority for him is indicated in the fact that he really wrote this book, published it, and did so at a pivotal time in our nation's history. He did so at a time when he knew such things would be controversial. He knew that there would be a conversation and controversy started just about his book. Folks, the phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Is it necessary that we define marriage and family? Is it necessary that we make clear that it's not just for adult happiness, that it is for the raising of children, that it is for the very foundation of civilization? that marriage and family are those things without which civilization itself will be impossible. If everything's merely up for grabs, if the definition's just a fill-in-the-blank for whatever you would want, if it is what the cultural elite say it should be, then we're in big trouble. Senator Rick Santorum has written a book. I wrote a review of the book. He came on the air today to tell us what he thinks. He's put his career on the line. What about you? The phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast, this is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. If you live by computers, you die by computers. And, folks, if you've been trying to call in and couldn't get through, just try again, please. We've just had a couple of computer glitches here, but we do have Don from Iowa ready to talk. Don, it's your turn.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad to have you. What do you think about Senator Rick Santorum's argument that we have to define marriage and family?
I agree completely with it. I think it needs to be defined as a man and a woman, as God set it up to be. If not, the society as a whole right now, the teens are completely hopeless. They're having trouble because they're not introduced to God and their family structure as they should be in the first place. And if we take the family unity out of that as well, it's just going to make that even worse.
Appreciate your call. Yeah, Don, I think you make a very good point. The confusion in terms of what this teaches the young is, I think, one of the most essential issues here. You know, what are we saying to young people? The contours of the law establish what is normal in a society. And just as the senator says, what is normal is assumed to be moral, and especially as it is recognized by law. Let's go to Paul calling from Cincinnati, Ohio. Paul, your turn.
Hello?
Yeah, Paul, go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling to say that I disagree.
Okay. You got it. Go right ahead.
I just think that marriage should be between any two people who love each other. Just not that, it's not going to destroy society. It really just brings about, a more stable society if there's a place where we can really build upon a more open and honest relationship between people. Kids who are raised in same-sex households are just as open as anybody else and just as successful and loving and everything else. It's a warm, helpful institution for our society.
All right. Well, Paul, listen, I appreciate your call and want to make sure you have your say. Let me ask you a question, a follow-up on that. Does it give you any pause whatsoever that that human society has never recognized same-sex unions as marriage before?
It really doesn't. I think that over time we've realized that this is something that's normal. It happens everywhere in society. Homosexuality is not a choice. It's something where it's intrinsic, and as people become more educated and realize that and accept it, then it's new and it's an okay thing. Just because we haven't had things recognized before doesn't make it bad. It makes it different.
Okay, one further question there, just because I think this will help clarify issues for us. How important to you is a biblical definition of family?
I think for a lot of people it's important. Personally, to me, I think that there's a separation of church and state, and I think that in like a lot of European countries, if we have a civil marriage versus a religious marriage, then people who choose to have a religious marriage, that's great and that's good for them, but there's also the civil side of it, which people are protected through health care, which really protects children. Right now, a lot of people can't get access to health care. They can't get inheritance rights. Spouses, people who've lived in the same house for 50 years, if they don't own it together, they can't necessarily inherit that. They can't, and that's destructive. They can also not visit their partners in hospitals. The religious piece of it is important, but the civil side, that's more of a protection for everybody, and it makes our society stronger. If everybody had health care and people could work to eradicate poverty, we would have a better society.
Paul, I really do appreciate your call, and as much as I disagree with your argument, you are a very articulate spokesperson. And I think you'll spark some further conversation. I think what this really helps to underline is the basic divide between persons who disagree over same-sex marriage over larger issues in terms of biblical authority, for those of us who are Christians, and also what the public policy structure, what the structure of laws and habits and customs of a society should teach. Folks, the phone number 877-893-8255. We're going to go to Jill calling from Tampa, Florida, listening on WTBN. Jill, it's your turn.
Hi. I want to say I do agree with the book, and I just wanted to make 3 points. I'll say them and then hang up. First, I think the moral majority supports marriage between a man and a woman, and they need to start speaking up more by writing their senators and their congressmen. 3, even if same-sex marriage is not legalized, homosexuals can adopt children already. And 3, the young generation, which sounds pretty much like your last caller, they're not opposed to gay marriage, so even if our generation fights it, I think eventually it's going to be legalized.
Well, those are 3 very interesting observations. Let me just take on that last one here for just a moment for the sake of time, as we're losing time with the ticking of the hour here. I think that is an argument that, just taking it at the objective level, let's not take it in the do we want this to happen, do we not want this to happen. Let's just take it for a minute. Let's just take Jill's point when she says, given the demography, given the fact that younger people tend to be much more accepting of homosexual marriage, this is just going to happen. And let's just say that's not a stupid argument. There are trends and indicators that would suggest to us that that's exactly the case. Now we go back to the, if that's the case, what do we do about it? Some people, obviously, if you're for homosexual marriage, you just want to let it happen. But if you're opposed to it, then you've got to do something right now on 2 fronts. First of all, we have to reach the conscience of the nation. We have to convince persons, heart, mind, and soul, that marriage is heterosexual and not homosexual. But the second thing is that it shows why something like the Federal Marriage Amendment is needed right now, because if it doesn't happen soon, it's not likely to happen. Very quickly, we're going to go to Bill in Lansing, Michigan. We've got a little time, Bill. We want to take your call. Go right ahead.
I agree completely with the senator there. Dr. Moeller, you know, just I'm a Southern Baptist. You're a Southern Baptist. I've heard there's 34 million Southern Baptists. Just a third of those are grown men. If we would just stand up to this, you know, there's only 1.5 to 2% of homosexuals in this country. If the Christian men would just stand up and do, rather than praying to God, asking Him to change it on His own, to pray to God to know what to do, this wouldn't be a problem today. And I get very frustrated with our Christian community anymore. We want to just sit back and use God as a scapegoat and say, God's not doing it, so He must want it.
Bill,
I hear a lot of that anymore.
Bill, I appreciate your call, and it's good to hear from you there in Michigan. Just in terms of truth and numbers, it's about 16 million who are on the rolls of Southern Baptist Convention churches, but your point is still there. There's a lot of evil. And when you talk about the failure of leadership in our time, it is a failure of men in the home and in the church and in the society. It's a failure of Christian leaders and preachers to preach the truth. It's a failure of Christians, men and women, to live and to contend for and to teach and to demonstrate the truth of God's word in every dimension of life, starting right at the home, marriage, family, parenting, children. That's where we have to start, folks. I'll be right back with some final thoughts. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back, folks. We're very quickly going to take the call from Steve. No, it's Joe calling from Cleveland, Ohio. Joe, go right ahead.
All right, thank you. Hey, I wanted to just make a comment. The title of the book reminded me of a book title from a leading liberal senator, It Takes a Village. And I'd like to say that I thank you for taking a book that would take a counter and a productive approach to what was in the It Takes a Village book. I haven't read it because I didn't think there was anything worthwhile in it, but at least from the on the surface, from the main objective point of view, I think we need to grant back from the government and put it back in the hands of the family.
Appreciate your call, Joe. And let me also say, if folks, some of you were hanging on and holding, and I apologize for the computer confusion, but, you know, that's just one of the factors of contemporary life. We are dependent upon these machines with their little digitalized dots that give us information or don't. But thankfully, most of the time they work. And I want to thank all our callers who were hanging in there. And you really contributed to this conversation. It was fascinating to hear from Paul, who called in to argue for same-sex marriage, and for others who called in to agree with the senator and with me concerning the necessity of a civilization defining marriage as an essentially heterosexual institution and protecting marriage and family through a system of customs and laws and public policies. Folks, when you define family, it comes down to what in the world you're going to use as a basic definition. And it has to start, I want to argue, right with the family as marriage, and then from marriage to children. But then there are extended kin as well. And I appreciate the larger definition of family that includes relationships by blood, kin, or adoption. And so we fully recognize and we need to honor and respect those ties that come by blood, that is, by reproduction, by descent, by having children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and by extended kin. We understand that the family also includes, by extension, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandmothers, grandparents, and all the rest. In a day in which we should be thankful that human longevity is getting longer, people are living longer, more and more children are knowing great-grandparents and even great-great-grandparents, and that is a great thing. We also understand that family is wonderfully and legitimately and gloriously extended by legal adoption. That, too, is very important, and God's glory is in it. But we have to be very, very careful that as we're defining family, we don't decide that we can just make it anything we want it to be. We can just take the mores and the controversies of a contemporary time and say, well, we'll just redefine family. We'll redefine marriage in order to meet that expectation, that cultural demand. This is a time for Christians to think and to act on the right Christian thinking. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.